one of the most uplifting shows on radio, No Glass Ceiling, introduces women in business who do just that, run their business, and women in business roles that once were taboo. Join me now for No Glass Ceiling on Business Radio X. And away we go again with another Glass Ceiling, coming to you live from the Stuart Title Studio here in Tucson, Arizona. No Glass Ceiling, well, it's about women who are successful. More than that, they're not just successful, they're entrepreneurs. They've taken the big step out of the corporate world and become their own bosses. They've become successful business people, and we're lucky to hear their stories and why they are and what they're trying to do. Or maybe they haven't quite stepped out yet. Maybe they haven't really gone into their own business. Just maybe they're still working a corporate job. And they are top of the ceiling, though. They're CEOs, they're presidents. These sorts of jobs were taboo some time ago, if you may remember. Not anymore. And that's great to hear, because we're very fortunate. Today we have a terrific mix of people. Boy, do we ever. Lindsay Welch. Lindsay is the, for starters, Ostis Strategies LLC. She's the president and CEO of that company. She's an experienced executive, driven by persistent, almost unshakable optimism, with a history of superior results in revenue growth and business development. Hi there, Lindsay, and welcome.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
That sounds pretty exciting. It's going to be interesting what we're going to be talking to you about. Morgan Lang, she's the baby of the lot today. Azuli Language Solutions. Why Azuli?
It's a long story.
All right.
It took me a long time to get to that name.
Okay.
I can explain in more detail.
It's marvelous, but I want to get to that. Mm-hmm. She's the founder and CEO of Azuli Language Solutions, offering certified translation and interpretation services, both in English and Spanish. And she's not Spanish, and she didn't come from a Spanish background, and she never learned to speak Spanish as a child. Think about that. What on earth would make this woman want to do this? It's a smart service, and I would say in this neck of the woods, 47% of our population of the Tucson region are Hispanic. It's going to be a very successful business for young Morgan, isn't it?
I'm hoping so.
Welcome. Good on you.
Thank you.
Lucretia Free, upon completion of her MBA at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, Lucretia began a 15-year career in law firm marketing, in law firm marketing, you know, marketing law firms, where she was an in-house marketing director for a large corporate law firm in the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome.
Thank you.
It sounds fantastic. We're going to hear from you. And on the money side of things, we have one of the best in the business in our region by the name of Pam Hopman. The Hopman Group. Are you any relation to the tennis player?
Well, the Hopman is my married name, and my husband is a distant relative of the
How
Hopman
about
Tennis
that?
Group.
Yeah, he was an Aussie, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, great tennis player. A financial advisor with more than 20 years of experience, Pam creates and grows wealth for her clients. Aren't they lucky? Right throughout the United States, not just here in Tucson either, but right throughout the states. Welcome, Pam. Lovely to have you. How did you first get into financial planning?
Well, I found myself a stay-at-home mom for most of my adult life, and then when it was time for me to go back to work, I'd done some dabbling in some of the areas of financial planning, and I realized I was unhirable. So I started my own business at the age of 48.
What do you mean unhirable?
I had no experience that would translate to a corporate job.
Yeah, yeah. So what that would mean is simply you've done an awful lot, but you would be, you're too old. I'm sorry, that's what corporate says. Anything over, 28? You're too old, too much experience, or whatever. So you didn't let that stop you, did you?
Oh, no. I just took the bull by the horns and started a company in Illinois, where we were living at the time, and ran that for 4 or 5 years and went to work for a corporation for 2 years training, and then moved to Tucson 10 years ago, where I haven't stopped running a business since. It's just a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And you've also made, how many would you have on your database, basically, as clients?
Well, I've got close to 200 regular financial clients, but we also have a tax practice with 523.
Okay. And you're constantly looking after these people, right?
Constantly.
So that's, you don't need 10,000. You look after what you've got, right?
No. I like the size we are. But actually, we do want to grow.
Okay.
And we're actively interviewing, looking for a couple of new people to come in as advisors or to be trained as advisors.
The Hopman style, though.
Yes.
Because there's a big difference. There's lots of so-called advisors out there who say they're advisors. But are they just that? On the personal financial planning side, you've created the money profile.
Compliments on your website, by the way. I thought it was lovely, the way you present things. A financial behavior and analysis tool. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, there was one thing missing, I thought, in the way that financial planning was done. It didn't take into consideration who you were. It just sort of said, do this. Didn't care what your background was, didn't care what your finances really were. Just said, go save a bajillion dollars, and then you'll be ready to retire. And I worked 2 years at that corporate job, I worked with the DISC profile a lot. The DISC profile is a personal behavioral analysis tool. And I said, there's got to be a way to translate some of this technology to human beings. So I created the money profile. And so everyone is a blend of up to 5 different personalities. And we have a lot of fun with the names and the descriptions of the personalities, because if financial planning is really heavy unless you try to make it fun.
I was going to say,
I try to make it a little bit more fun to do that. So I use that as one of the cornerstones when I plan with people, because it really allows me to present a pathway for them that they can actually stay on, as opposed to go save a gajillion dollars and you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, interesting. Fabulous. Interesting. I think there's people I know, including me, need to talk to you about making some money, because it's all very well making it. It's keeping it, isn't it?
It's all about keeping it.
It's all about keeping it. Lucretia, you moved to Tucson with your family back
in
2001, right?
Yep, I did.
You lived in Loretta Ranch, just outside of Vail. How do you feel about the move at that time?
I was resistant. It was hard for me to leave the San Francisco Bay Area and move to Tucson. All my friends were there. I had young children, and we were all part of a mom's group there and all that. But I can remember the first experience that I had when I finally got to Tucson was I felt like I could breathe. You don't realize when you live in the Bay Area how close every part of land, every bit of land is so valuable. And so there's very little open space. And so when I came here, I felt like my lungs expanded, and wow, this is pretty cool. So I loved it, and I've loved it ever since.
It's interesting, because there's a bit of a misnomer about that. A lot of people come here from all over America to get well, our dry weather and so on. And yet, we all cop sinusitis, or we get ragweed, our chests, and this and
Well,
that.
You know what happened.
You can't have everything, right?
Everybody brought their plants
they
to
did.
Here.
They
because
did.
Because they wanted to duplicate the experience
what
that
they
had
there.
Where they were.
Lawns and special
exactly.
trees. And God, take your seeds back with you.
That's exactly right.
Heavens above. But also, you talk about water. I mean, being an Australian, I love Tucson, but I do miss the water. Mm-hmm. I miss the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I miss
good
being
news.
Able to go down and walk down there.
We're not far from California. So to me, it's the perfect location. So when you want to get
you
the water,
it, yeah.
you can get to it, or you can go to one of the wonderful lakes that we have here in our own state.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
We do have a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
And if I said to you, I think I read somewhere, per head per capita, we've got more boats than anybody else.
Interesting.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
The desert, you know? So this is where you founded the Vail Voice. Vail is, now let me think, Vail is what, south?
Far southeast.
We're southeast of Tucson.
Far southeast.
It's one of the fastest growing little areas, isn't it?
Always has been. It was when I moved here in 2001. It's an area that has excellent schools, and if you talk to most of the people that live out there, at some point that's what drove them to live in the area, was because of the fantastic school system. And I'm no different than that. I had 3 kids that were raised in the school system. But it also has affordable housing, which is something that is important to some of us.
Right.
So that was a good match for me to be able to identify that location.
Yeah.
And then when I moved out there, I noticed that there were lots of stakes in the ground that said, housekeeping, call this number, and landscaping, call this number.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered whether or not they had their own publication out there. Now, we all know about the demise of the large
newspapers,
mm-hmm. right? But niche publications like mine, and I'm not the only one. There are others within Pima County. We're doing very well because I don't have any breaking news about what's happening politically or happening on the national stage. This is goofy stuff about what's going on in our little area.
Local community.
Like,
people still love local
community. Absolutely. Like there's a new business opening up here. Mm-hmm. That's huge news for those of us that live out in the area.
Yeah, my word.
And
do you deliver it into the letterbox or the front door or is it up the driveway?
No driveway, because it's annoying for people with
all
the winds and the monsoons.
Yeah.
We don't want nasty papers laying all over our neighborhoods. So it gets delivered by the post office.
Okay.
And it's a monthly publication. It goes to over 22,000 homes, every home in the area.
Cool.
And It's grown from...
It's called the Veil Voice.
It's called the Veil Voice.
A monthly.
And there was recently a survey that was done by a marketing company of the area that was about something completely other than my publication. But one of the questions they asked the respondents is, where do you get your news for this area? And the Veil Voice was the number one newspaper source.
Very good. Congrats.
Thank you.
Well done. Very well done. So there you go. So now, you'd never run a newspaper before. Personally.
No, but I'm very comfortable with it because in my role as being the marketing director for the large corporate law firm, I was responsible for marketing collateral. So I would put out newsletters for the firm and work with the attorneys on its content. So I knew the basics of how to publish something.
Okay, so what you did was transfer that knowledge just into another vertical, virtually.
Absolutely.
And that went from there. So you'll be able to do that, Morgan, you know. Yours is very diverse when I think about it. The founder and CEO of Azuli Language Solutions. When I read about this, I was looking, for people to come on the show. And this sort of, it just sort of caught my eye a little. You're originally from Washington, D.C., but moved to Tucson to study.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. Twice.
Twice. Pima Community College and the University of Arizona.
That's right.
All right. And now that's where you earned your degrees in translation and interpretation studies, i.e. Spanish and ecology and evolutionary biology.
Yes, that's right.
God, are you a bookworm or something, are you? You're bright eyes.
I enjoy school. I love learning.
Really? Good on you.
But I also changed my career. So I went back to school to get the skills I needed to be where I am today.
Okay. Well, that was a decision you had to make, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So why I find this lady fascinating is the fact that you didn't grow up speaking Spanish, correct?
Well, that's sort of true. I didn't grow up in a bilingual family. So my childhood, my very young formative years, I wasn't speaking Spanish until I was in school in D.C. and started taking Spanish classes as a child. So I did speak it in school through formal learning and classes, and I continued all the way through college here at the University of Arizona. My main motivation was that I heard, even as a child, from many, many adults, oh, I took some Spanish some years ago, but I can't speak a word. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what a shame, what a loss.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I heard that all the time, even as a kid and all the way through college. And I thought, well, I don't want to lose. Why am I taking these classes if it's just going to end up being no good for me? So I kept studying Spanish all the way through the University of Arizona. Even though I was majoring at that time in science, ecology and evolutionary biology, I knew that Spanish would somehow be valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how I was going to bridge science and Spanish at that time.
Right.
But now I know. I'm here now.
Well, what are the percentages? 47% or something of the Tucson area habitat is Hispanic?
Yes, Spanish-speaking.
Spanish-speaking. Mm-hmm. So where are we going to be in 10 years from now?
That's right. It's ever-changing and
growing.
You're
going to be leader of the field. I'm starting to think I should learn it. But I noticed an ad the other night where you can just press buttons and learn quickly, because that might be good. No good?
It's not that easy. Well, it's certainly a useful tool to become conversant in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I could get a job easily as a bilingual person when the economy changed and I decided to get out of the environmental sciences and nonprofit work. And there just weren't many lucrative jobs. And everyone said, oh, you're bilingual. You can work anywhere. You can get
right,
a job anywhere.
Yeah.
And I looked into that, and that wasn't actually true. What I found was that I had to become certified and have real training and experience and a degree.
Okay.
So that's what took me
certified.
Back to school.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I could take that another way, couldn't I? Have you been certified? Let's throw her in jail.
Yes.
Legal interpreter, a certified legal interpreter
right.
through the Arizona Supreme Court.
Right.
Which qualifies you to perform legal interpretation, mm-hmm. right? As well as provide certified translations for legal purposes.
That's right.
That'd be nerve-wracking. I mean, you can't make a mistake in this stuff.
That's right. It's high stakes and a lot of responsibility. And I enjoy that a lot. I really take pride in what I do, and I try to do everything the very best that I can. And I like... The mission of my business is to connect people, people that can't otherwise communicate. A language barrier is certainly a hard barrier to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of barriers invisible that keep us from communicating with each other. And I think that's a real shame. And so I think that's my favorite part about being an interpreter and translator is the ability to connect people, be a bridge that they need to successfully communicate with one another. Mm-hmm. And to do it well, and I take a lot of responsibility and pride in what I do, and the stakes are high in legal and medical as well.
I was going to say,
But there's so much that I can do in this field that it doesn't have
diverse,
to be.
It's diverse, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's unlimited for you, really.
Right.
How does one go about getting the certification?
Well, my training at Pima Community College, the Translation and Interpretation Studies program, prepared me immensely. It's a really amazing program that I do recommend to anybody listening who is bilingual in English and Spanish and interested in pursuing a career in translation and interpretation. It's one of the best in the country, especially for the price. And it's a great preparation to move forward in this mm-hmm. line of work. And because of that, I was prepared to take it's called the ACICP, and I became certified through the Arizona Supreme Court as a legal interpreter.
Do you get offers to go legally then into law firms or perhaps work in the courts?
Certainly. I have, because of my certification, I'm registered on the Arizona Court Interpreters Registry.
Right.
So I do get contacted just from that and other local businesses. I'm out doing outreach with other attorneys and firms to see how I can get engaged. There's
cool.
kind of a small community of legal interpreters in Tucson,
right.
and some people kind of already have it worked out. There's also a lot of competition for people like me with call centers. So a lot of hospitals and doctor's offices and law firms, if they can, in certain situations, they'll use a call center, which is not the direction I want to go.
No.
So I have to do.
But good to do it. It's experience.
Mm-hmm,
then you
absolutely.
Can say you've always done it. Then
absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day you'll be running your own call center. You never know.
That's where I'm headed.
You also specialize in scientific and technical writing, editing, translation, interpretation, thanks to your strong background in science and research, particularly in the environmental sciences.
Right. So my degree, my Bachelor of Science from the U of A, is in ecology and evolutionary biology. It's a mouthful. That confuses a lot of people. Basically, it's environmental sciences. It's also the basic starting point for pre-med and pre-vet students in general. So I did a lot of schooling and classes in math, science, engineering type of folks were in classes with me. So I have a strong background in science, and I really would love to get in more into the field of doing scientific translation and interpretation. And just last week, I was contacted by somebody from the Biosphere 2. They're doing a Spanish lecture series, and
I believe
it's focused on climate change. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about working with them to bridge this gap between science and language and Spanish-speaking population and using my seemingly unconnected skills together to do some really amazing,
there you go.
Exciting
That's
work.
That's exciting.
Thank you.
You never know, too. If you go down to Azteca, maybe they're doing a diving series or something and they need Spanish translation.
Absolutely.
I mean, I just think there's enormous potential for what you're doing.
Right.
Lindsay, Ortus Strategies.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. You're an experienced executive. Now, what's a self-proclaimed social entrepreneur?
So, I guess my background was largely entrepreneurial just because I had a natural affinity to do what hadn't been done before. So I had started a school in Manhattan, Kansas when we were living there and from the ground up and did all of that process. And so then I had a background in learning how to create something from nothing because mm-hmm. that had happened. And so Audis is Latin for growth. And so in picking a name,
right.
that was the reason for that. Social entrepreneurship. I found myself having a knack for bringing in revenue. I did that to self-support the school. It's running and thriving. It's a strong program. I think arguably the number one early childhood program in Manhattan, Kansas. And then coming here, I found myself working with Junior Achievement as their executive director. Then I was the executive director for the American Heart and Stroke Association. And through that, I was bringing in revenue, connecting with donors, increasing our profitability mm-hmm. to make a difference in programs. So mm-hmm.
A bit of a passion for tracking problems too, though, right?
Yeah, well, I think
you can't bring in dough without going, hurdles everywhere.
That's right. Well, I think the big thing for me was learning that you can make money, and
that's great, but what are we doing with that? And I felt a passion for the services piece, especially here in the Tucson area where we have, I don't think that our services are going to be able to cover all the needs that we have. And so if we do not have business support to do that, we really can't make a difference in an impact.
Well, you're in
that.
A competitive environment, 3,200 not-for-profits alone.
Right. So I'm not a not-for-profit, but my focus is in helping small business increase their profit margin and be able to invest that those resources back into the community.
And back into the community.
Through the nonprofit community, absolutely. So,
so in effect, you're helping them.
Right. Because what I learned from sitting in a nonprofit role was there was never enough money to go around, right? We're all competing and poaching donors and how do I get money to cover what I need? And we need to, once you do that, then the next year we need to make even more. And so it's really tough. And so what I learned is the way to solve a problem on that is to bring the profit margin of business up. Because if the business is doing well, they're able to invest that money in those areas as long as their profits are continuing to grow. So.
Mm-hmm. There's more interest in investing back into the community, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, and that's not necessarily just in a...
No, but it's a good thing because a lot of businesses now, big companies, they're not just advertising anymore.
That's right.
They're doing what they call cause marketing.
That's right.
And that's for a darn good cause. I will get involved.
Right.
On the proviso, it's rinky-digged and it's going to be run properly.
And there's a shared services piece. Like sometimes it's not just a dollar amount, but it's about the business being a partnership. And so I think in social entrepreneurship, it's about creating additional revenue, but really what are we doing with those opportunities as they continue to grow? And so that's how that happened.
Well, that's marvelous. You offer, don't you think so, girls? I think it's terrific what she's achieved there. You offer a wide range of consulting services, all designed to help you and your organization reach your fullest potential. So if somebody's listening and they could do with somebody that's going to turn this thing around for you, then maybe this is the lady that could do it. Who are the biggest problem makers that you come across?
Well, I don't know necessarily problem makers, but I have my work cut out for myself is when a small business, sometimes you're everything. You are the founder. You have a long list of things that have to be done. And so you're stretched thin to be able to really invest in one strategic area. And so I learned that firsthand. I was a futurist with Tucson Tamale Company. I worked closely with Todd and Sherry Martin, and they have this amazing business. But they're so taxed because they're the center of all of that. And so I think what I'm learning is that to be an extension of the team, my biggest clients now, I work as an extension of their team. So when I'm contacting prospective clients or I'm working on their sales or whatever I'm involved in, I'm working on behalf of their organization without being internal. And that's a great partnership a lot of times because the overhead that comes with employing me to be a part of their team is really high, and so it's a much more strategic partnership for me to be able to work as an extension of their team, and it doesn't limit me to be siloed into one organization. So
I can really relate to being the one person spread very thin, expected to do everything, and
That's the choice you make, young lady.
I know.
You're an entrepreneur.
I know. Here I go, and it's okay. But it's a lot.
It's a lot
to take on, and it's a lot of responsibility, and you have to wear all the hats until you grow big enough to hire people to do the things that you're not best at.
You know the stuff I hate worst? At. The bookwork. The bookwork. You've got to do accounts. You've got to do follow-up and all of that. I hate that side of it all, yet I love my clients.
Of course.
And I love looking after them, but just that bookwork component of it, you know. We did have somebody on the show, actually, Susan Pisano. She runs a company that does all of that for people now, the front and center, so more of farming it out. I've noticed that in the last 10 years, there's more farming out of freelance work than there's ever been before, which is creating jobs.
And in my experience, running an organization that's focused on strategic development and sales, I mean, that's my niche. And so I don't have an affinity for some of the administrative processes. While I understand the importance of referring that out, what I'm really good at is the connection piece and being able to identify how to get in front of the right audience in order to make the right connections and in order to close those accounts that are bringing in revenue. And so I think what I'm seeing in the seat that I'm in is that it's less about scaling my ability to be involved in a lot of things, but really being intentional in where I can acknowledge. This is where my strength is, and this is where I need to stand. And then being able to be a connector for, if that's not something I offer, being able to make a referral to someone that I know is probably especially in that industry that can do that.
Right.
So opportunities like this where I can connect with other people are really helpful.
Yeah.
Especially for people who have a drive for relational, have a propensity for relational connections.
Well, and see, that's the thing that I think is really important as a small business owner, is to be able to recognize what you are good at, refining and honing those skills, but frankly, outsourcing the things that you're not good at. I'm not a good bookkeeper. And so for me to to bog myself down in doing that is not in my own best interest or my business's best interest. So for me, it's not about hiring employees. It's about outsourcing to someone who is a very good bookkeeper, and that's their specialty, and they do that great.
All right.
That allows me time to free up on what I'm doing, because I have to sell the business. I have to explain the business. I have to
be
the voice in the face of the business.
But you're building the business from scratch, remember? And let's say you don't have enough budget to be able to outsource straight off.
Well,
see, it's a catch-22, isn't it?
Well, not for me, because in my business, I wouldn't have been able to start if I didn't have some ad revenue to pay for what I do.
Exactly.
So then I have to, I had to have something.
I can relate to that. Pam, did you, when you started, was it similar?
You know, you have to do everything when you first start. But I actually have a process for financial planning for the entrepreneur, the small business. So it's not about the things that you do, Lindsay, but it's more about looking at the business as it's growing and making sure that all the financial pieces are where they belong and all the protections are where they belong, and that creating the income is huge, but then how do we make sure it's going where you want it to go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a big difference. Educational wise, Lindsay, you have a Bachelor of Business from the University of Phoenix.
I do.
Okay, and a marketing minor in education. Mm-hmm. Got that back in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at what keeps you busy a little bit. You're in the Greater Tucson Leadership 16.
Yes.
What is that about?
I was a 40 under 40 I was a participant in the Greater Tucson Leadership Program. I now serve on their board of directors. That was an opportunity. It's a 10-month experiential program and leadership program where you spend one day a month working on an issue here in the Tucson community. So learning whether it's education or culture or whatever the issue day is of the day of that month. And then you work with a cohort of people. So we have about anywhere between 35 and 40 in your class, and then you do that for 10 months, and then you're a part of this alumni that are here, so they also produce the Man and Woman of the Year event. They're just heavily involved in the Tucson community.
See, look at the connections out of all of this, you know, and current vice president, member, Tucson Metro
Chamber
of Commerce.
Mm-hmm. We have an
Emerging Leaders Council.
That's right, the Emerging Leaders Council. So that was a group that they started 3 years ago under Mike Varney's leadership, and in that they wanted approximately 25 under 40 professionals that were being viewed as best in class, heavily involved in the community. And so through that, there's an application process, and we were selected. And then I've been a part of that, and I'm now sitting in the seat as vice president for that organization.
Good on you.
Thanks.
It's marvelous. You're a real achiever.
Thank you.
Now, Azuli, which is Latin for growth.
No, that's Otis.
That's hers. I had to come up with a name. My mission was to come up with a name for my business that sounded and was spelled the same in English and Spanish, and wasn't already taken, and didn't confuse anybody. And I had a lot of trouble coming up with something.
Right.
And so I made something
and probably
up.
Everything good you got was taken.
Exactly. Yeah. I had a name that I really was committed to, and there was another organization similar to a different type of interpreting. It was sign language interpreting that here in Tucson had part of the name that I wanted, and I just couldn't come up with anything, so I ended up making up a word. So Azul, A-Z-U-L in Spanish, means blue, and I really like the color blue. I just kept kind of visualizing the color blue, and I just took every vowel and stuck it on the end and went with the one I liked. And it wasn't taken,
Azuli.
So I win. Azuli.
Mm-hmm. Azuli. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in Spanish it would be pronounced more with an S, Azuli. In English, Azuli with a Z.
Blue Language Solutions.
Mm-hmm. Like my eyes.
That could be taken anyway, though, couldn't it? Blue Language Solutions. We only do X-rated porn. Mm-hmm. Yes, oh, fair enough. Okay. What are these invisible barriers that many people separate, keep them from interacting, do you think? What's the biggest one?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of kind of preconceived notions about who we're looking at or who we're talking to, barriers based on what you look like, where you come from, the tone in your voice or the accent you have, based on where you come from. You maybe can relate to that. Folks, you know, all my family's from the South, Southeast, and they have very strong Southern accents. And things like accents from another country, really, we base a lot of judgments on that without meaning to or whatever. So I think there's a lot of these types of barriers that keep us from interacting with people.
Right.
And what I have found by being bilingual is a whole new world opens up to me. I can listen to music in Spanish and enjoy it in a deeper way. I can read articles in Spanish that I wouldn't have access to just being monolingual. So I really like the idea of being the bridge that can connect people that otherwise wouldn't have any sort of interaction, because they don't speak the same language, or in situations where they literally have to communicate, like in a legal situation.
Mm-hmm.
Being the conduit between attorneys and clients, or medical providers and patients.
Well, you're still new and you're setting up. You haven't been going that long, but how are people reacting to what you're trying to do now?
Everyone has been incredibly encouraging and supportive. I'm a proud member of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We should talk.
Yes.
And they are just an incredible group of people and very supportive and great mentors and always encouraging, lots of referrals. And I get a lot of support here in Tucson. I wonder sometimes if I would have the same experience and the same support if I were starting a business in another city. I don't know. Folks here at the table maybe can give me more idea of what it's like to start a business in another state, another city, but I feel very lucky to be here in Tucson.
I think it's a great spot, Tucson, to be doing what you're doing.
Especially for what I'm doing, because I also would really like to work more and more with businesses here and across the border that want to do more business or exchange in whatever form across the border. Trade, or even just translating websites, brochures, outreach materials, what have you, to connect people that, you know, businesses to clients, nonprofits to their communities, what have you.
I think between the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, 1,800 odd members in that one, and 1,500 in the Tucson Metro Chamber, you're going to meet some people that could really do with your services.
Right.
Not a problem there. The question, let's talk about a different area of your life. But before we get off the veil voice, didn't you do the Tankaverde voice too?
Yes, I currently publish the Tankaverde voice.
The Tankaverde,
as well.
So that's two papers.
That's
that you're
two publications
doing.
That two are publications. Community newspapers, yes.
All right, so let's talk about another area. You love shooting.
I do.
Yeah, I haven't met too many female shooters.
Well, we're all over.
You're all over?
And one of the things that is very exciting about this shooting industry, especially now for women, is we're the fastest growing segment of shooters. That's where the area of expansion is coming. And so I was invited to go to the range one day with a friend and was appalled at the fact that I was asked to go to the range, because it was just a very negative idea to me, a negative idea of guns and a negative idea of the whole aspect of it. But begrudgingly, I went and was quite surprised at what I found when I arrived there, because it was just regular, everyday folks.
Sure.
They were people that, which anybody who shoots will hear my voice and say, well, duh. But I was someone who didn't have any exposure to shooting or any exposure to the industry. So it was very eye-opening for me that it didn't fit the sort of the stereotype that we read and see.
Well, that's it. That's it. It was the same for me in another country. We don't have guns in Australia. Mm-hmm. You hunt with guns.
Mm-hmm.
And by gee, you've got to be lucky to get that license.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind anything else.
Mm-hmm.
We had one series only with one nutcase that went mad on a tourist thing, you know, because it was a submachine gun or some other thing that should never have been. It's a war. That's what I'm very down on, how
well,
they got
access. That's a
you
whole
walk
different
into Walgreens thing. And buy one of
what
these.
What I'm things, you know. Talking about, what my business is all about, is unifying women and supporting women who enjoy shooting. And the women that enjoy shooting are women who shoot competitively. There's three gun. There's trap and skeet. There's women who shoot for hunting that that use their rifles, and they go hunting in the winter and shoot deer, and they cut up the deer and eat off of it all winter long.
Yeah, a lot of people live off that. Mm-hmm. They need
that.
And
there's people that just enjoy going to the range, just like you would enjoy doing archery or playing any other competitive sport and trying to hit the target.
So you're an avid shooter now, see? And you didn't worry about it before you were taken there, though.
Yeah, right? I didn't think about it.
And now you produce a thing called womanshooter.com.
That's right. It started off being The American Woman Shooter, which is a publication magazine that I did for about 3 years, where I wanted the story of the average American woman that I saw at the range when I went to the range. There were women that go in groups. There's women's gun groups, and their guns are all blinged out. And there are women that were there with their kids. And there's, it was just this incredible thing that I didn't even know existed. And I thought, well, why isn't this story being told?
Right.
So for the next 3 years after I went to the range, I started this publication where we told the story of the average American woman shooter. We have a Facebook page called The American Woman Shooter. We have over 35,000 people that interact with us on The American Woman Shooter. And it's just opened up the path where I realized then after I had the publication that I wanted to go more online and partner not just have information from my articles on available to women, but to also work with other women's publications that were across the internet. You know, again, I think what the common theme that I see among all of us is that we're interested in partnering and supporting and advancing whomever that we're working with. And so that's really the concept behind womanshooter.com. It's a central location, an information center, as it were, where information about shooting with regards to women is pulled together in one location. Mm-hmm. And then the women who visit the site, and we're open to men as well, who visit the site can go out and find more specific information based on the websites and contacts that they see there.
Well, hasn't there been a massive growth? I know I don't mean to just, you know, narrow down on one particular vertical, but there's been a massive growth in women's self-defense.
Absolutely.
Okay, and shooting.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as I say, they mightn't have been there, but now after 21 years here, I actually understand guns now and the necessity of them. It's just certain stuff I don't believe in, but boy, you know, it's time been turned around a little bit too.
Well, it's a great equalizer, you know.
Well, women, it is. I mean, unfortunately,
many women are under assault. They're being stalked by ex-boyfriends or strangers or whatever, and it's a very strong sense of empowerment for women to know that they can take care of themselves. One of the women that I met at the range was a woman who was actually in her 60s who cared for her mother in a rural area of Pima County. And she said, by the time I call the police, if something goes on, whatever was going down will have gone down.
And they've gone down too.
Yeah.
Like they're 50 miles away.
Absolutely. So she felt a very strong, and she got, of course, the key is getting training, you know, joining a club and getting experience and training so you know how to operate the gun and understand the safety principles as well. But it's pretty neat to be able to work with women all across the country who...
I was going
to
say, I mean, 35,000, that's congratulations.
Thank
you. Excellent. And that's what really made you start womanshooter.com, right?
Yeah,
you saw a need.
It is. I absolutely saw a need. It's the only website that pulls together information all across the internet by category. We have a self-defense category. We have a hunting category.
Do you have conferences and things? Is that starting?
No, I don't. There are many other women's shooting organizations that do that kind of thing, and so they do it very well. So I'm really trying to be an information center. I'm not trying to start anything like that. I just want to...
Sounds like you did anyway.
I'm not trying to start like a conference or anything.
Well, two newspapers and an online. I mean, heavens above. Are the kids growing and helping mommy in their business?
Well, my kids are all out of the house. They're in college or beyond.
Yeah, they're too busy doing their own life.
Doing their own thing.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think, Lucretia, is the most difficult aspect of owning your business?
Well, the hardest thing for me was that mile first step. It's like realizing that you can do it and taking that first step and feeling as though, am I worthy of actually starting my own business? Do I know enough to start my own business? Who am I to start a newspaper? Who am I to start a shooting? Who am I to do whatever, you know, the activities we were involved in? And so to me, that was the hardest thing, was just taking that first step and recognizing that absolutely I am. Why not me? Why not you? Why not all of us, you know, to be able to start our own businesses? And, you know, I don't think I'm revealing anything, but Pam and I are not 25 or 30. I mean, we're women who have had experience. And so the idea of being able to start and be successful later in life is something, a story that I don't think is told often enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wonderful to have young people that are doing their thing, the 40 under 40s and the 30 under 30s, and that kind of thing is wonderful and very much supportive of that. There are also, I want to make sure that I'm encouraging women and others who later in life decide they want to start a business, that absolutely you can
do it. Very much so. Just because you come to a retirement age or another, you know, depicted area in your life you're supposed to be doing. Who says what? It's your life.
Absolutely.
And often you've worked all your life for somebody else.
That's right.
Now, to me, you know, all that wonderful experience, why can't you do it for you?
That's right.
It's just a little bit of, you know, nerves to get over the initial idea of doing it, a little bit of chutzpah to go a bit further. What's the most gratifying aspect, you think, of owning your own business?
That's a self-answering question. It's owning your own business and being able to, it isn't true that you get to do whatever you want and that you don't have any responsibility. I mean, you have a very strong
sense. Yeah, and you get 5 days off a week.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some aspect, I'm sure with all of us, that we're kind of working all the time. It's really hard to set boundaries around, okay, you can't shut down like at 5 o'clock like you would if you were, I don't even know that this is true, that you could do that in the corporate world either, actually. But, you know, there's a misconception that about owning your own business. That it means that you don't have to answer to anybody. You have to answer every day
all
to your customers, to your community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so it's just a different kind of answering. And so what's been the most exciting is just being able to be a part of a community, to indeed start a community and conversations and just support people who are in need of seeking information. And in the case of the shooting magazine, to be able to work with women who are and empower them with information about how they can protect themselves or how they can take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. With the Vail Voice, I'm so honored to be a part of a community that has been so supportive of the publication.
Right.
And to sort of be the central gathering place there, in a sense, virtually speaking, mm-hmm. of information that we can share about what's going on in our area. So it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. What about people? It's all very well having a business, but you've got to find sometimes people to employ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you been lucky enough to find good qualified people, or have you had to start from scratch and teach everybody?
Yeah. The thing that one of the reasons that I started the business also was that I had young children when I first started it, and I wanted to be able to work flexibly. I've always known that I had to work and generate income, but I wanted to be able to work flexibly so that my kids could see me when I come home after, you know, 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock and pick them up after school. So I found that my businesses tend to attract people who are similarly positioned, who are interested in, for whatever set of reasons. It may be not be because they have young children. It may be because they have other things going on in their lives, but they want to be able to work flexibly. And so that's the way that I have found almost everybody who I've been involved with and have worked for me. And most of the people that I have a salesperson, I've got an editor, I've got someone who is a marketing director, and of course a layout and design person. So it's the way that I found these people has typically been through word of mouth. I found that even in my own publication, just putting an ad in for the paper opens the floodgates, and it doesn't necessarily focus on the kind of people that have the experience that are geared toward what I was looking for. So I found that word of mouth and professional contacts is the best way for me to have found who I work for. And I'm not concerned about getting some long resume with all their list of experience. I'm really interested in who that person is and what they're interested in doing from this point forward. You know, I can tell that they're able to put sentences together and they know how to dress themselves and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They know how to present. So I'm not worried about that part of it.
Right.
I want to know what they're interested in going from being and doing from this point forward.
And that's what counts too. Mm-hmm. But if I was to ask you, what was your biggest mistake that you've made being in business? Something you don't want to do again?
Not believe in myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always thought when I first started that somebody else needed to be with me. I wanted to kind of drag somebody else along. You want to do this with me? You want to do that with me?
Yeah, right.
Thinking that I wasn't enough alone with my ideas and concepts. And that is a hard lesson to learn, that you can do it on your own and that you don't need anybody else. You, of course, need people, a team and people to support you.
Mm-hmm,
but
sure.
I mean, I was kind of trying to drag people along on the concepts and all that. And then what can happen is you can get off track, and then it's no longer your vision. It's something else. Now, I know that people go into partnership, and I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just saying that for me, in my entrepreneurial endeavor, I was terrified. And the mistake that I made was trying too often to false starts, trying too often to draw other people in and do it with me so it wasn't just me out there. Because what if it failed? Mm-hmm. What if it failed?
Mm-hmm.
What a public failure for a publication that gets mailed to every home.
Mm-hmm.
It would be you know, what happens if it doesn't wind up working out? Everybody in each one of those 22,000 homes would know that I didn't make it, that I wasn't successful.
That's the hardest part you have to face and look in the mirror about. But you could also think of, gee, they're going to miss it if they don't get it.
Well, and that's why I did it. I mean, that's, you know, ultimately that idea won because, you know, but I mean,
I know what you mean.
The fear is something that is so real.
It is. It is real. Terribly real, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what's your biggest advice, right? That to somebody now listening, a young woman being wanting to be an entrepreneur, if she was standing in front of you right now and you were eyeball to eyeball, what would you offer?
Well, I would want to speak to not just the young woman, but again, women of all ages.
But of course, well, I'm referring
but
to
the
that.
But the point is that I would want to share with them that you can do it. You know, that just that there are women out there who have done it before. There are women out there who are happy to be assisting you, and as you go on your journey, I'm sure you've run into people who are very positive and supportive. I still need that. It's an environment where you kind of work in your own office, and it's very important for us to get out and to communicate with other people, not just in our business, but in ancillary businesses or even unrelated businesses, just to kind of share our stories with one another. So the thing that's most important, I think, is just being connected with others and knowing that you can do it, that you are enough, and that you can do it.
Wonderful. You've motivated me.
I'm glad. My book will be coming out next week.
All right. Any comment, ladies, on that?
I agree that empowered people empower others. And I think that what I've learned in my own journey, you know, I came to a community where Tucson is a very tight-knit community. And so when you're an outsider moving in or you're in a new venture, it sometimes feels like you're under scrutiny, like everybody's watching. And
tell me about it.
It's tough.
It's also very lonely when you come in on your own.
It is.
And I mean, from another country, it's even worse.
I wasn't coming from another country, but I was coming in new and didn't have credibility. And that was not necessarily a bad thing. It was a great thing that I had the opportunity to build my own reputation, but
right.
It also comes at high stakes that this is the one chance I'm getting. And so I think if you're in a position where you can empower others, for me coming in, I never thought I would start a business here because I felt like there's plenty of business here. And so I'll just find where I can find my best fit.
Yeah.
And it just organically developed that I was in a position where I could be able to see that I'm limited in what I'm able to give back to my peers in the community, because I'm siloed, and so I needed the opportunity to expand that, and so that's what opened that door for me. But I think that the ultimate endorsement comes from when you are involved and you are putting yourself out there, people see that hard work. I mean, people recognize that this is something, when your story is told. And I think, I mean, this year for me, I was the outstanding entrepreneur for the Inside Tucson Business Women of Influence. And that was such a humbling experience because I have a business that's just started it's been going for 2 years. And to hear that you're a winner, there are great businesses here that you're competing with.
Yeah, I've been going for 20 years and they're lucky to get a pat in the back.
Right. So I think that just sharing
How
your story
dare you,
and
2 years.
Well, but
congratulations.
I think the vulnerability that comes with, you know, sharing your story, I think has high rewards,
it
high
does.
Benefits.
Of course it does. You see, that's why I wanted you on the show. It's going to help your business, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You are mixing with the best of the best. Now, look, speaking of the best of the best, this young lady over here, 20 years of helping people, because you know what? It's pretty scary when you get old and you got no money behind you or anything else. And your job, you save a lot of people's lives because when they do retire, they've got something to enjoy a bit of life with, a bit of emergency. You've created the Natural Financial Solution. This is a conscious, personalized financial solution for every personality. How on earth would that work? I mean, everybody's schizophrenic, you know.
That becomes a challenge when they're schizophrenic. Now, everybody makes their financial decisions quite differently, and so having a process that actually takes that into consideration, and it does go back to the money profile as part of that whole solution.
Right, okay.
But, you know, one of the things about being a financial advisor, and, you know, I want to go back to what you were talking about just a second ago about starting a business in Tucson. I started in 2010 at the height of the recession, and I started a financial services firm. And you know what? I just did it.
There you go.
One of those
it's like trying
that,
to sell refrigerators to, you know, Eskimos.
we came to Tucson because my father was still alive, and there was no other family here. And it was just one of those things that, okay, this is what I know. This is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting in a meeting at the Arizona Small Business Association, ASBA, And there was a gentleman in that meeting who said, why the heck are you starting a business in Tucson in 2010? Don't you know how tough it is for entrepreneurs to get started here? Well, thank goodness it's changed over the last 8 years.
Yes.
Because it's not hard anymore. In fact, entrepreneurs, that's the top fastest growing business in the area. But back to the natural financial solution. It's just, you know, everybody needs to know what steps to take to become the best they can be, their best self around finances. And so my solution, my book, my program is all around helping predominantly women get to that best self when it comes around finances.
But you do a lot for business.
I do a lot for business,
because
too.
Because the Take Flight, doesn't that address the financial missteps that's made in a lot of businesses?
Yes. We look at six different areas in a business to help them become more streamlined and handle their finances better. I mean, almost every business has a business plan, but there's usually a gap between where they are and where they want to go. And, you know, we try to help them bridge that gap through making sure that on the financial side, everything is done the way it should be done.
So, financial planning for an individual, right? Mm-hmm. What do you come across then that is the most concerning topic?
The most concerning topic is, will I have enough money? Social Security is only going to cover about 40%.
Not only that, it's not going to be around.
Well,
so it's a natural question, though, isn't it?
It's
am
an
I
actual
gonna
question.
Have enough money?
So it's, am I going to have enough money? And so a lot of the times, we're just working with where people are at, because you can't beat them up for not doing what they should have done for 20 years. You have to say, okay, this is where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's an old Chinese proverb that says the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago and the next best time is right now. So we work with where you're at. We go over the different steps you can take. And we know people still have to live. So it's not, as I said, it's not trying to save a gazillion dollars. It depends on where you're at. Some people are really done very well saving, and they're natural at it.
Right.
Some people are not. And we have to create a system for them to be able to have the money they're going to need when they retire.
What about the new kids of today who want everything now? You know, do you go into schools at all? Do you ever go to, is there an age level that you're trying to teach to start early?
I haven't done that here. Although when I was in Illinois, I used to teach seventh graders how to pick stocks, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
We had a year long, and they were in groups, and they each had a group, and they had $100,000 pretend, and they would go and pick a stock, and they would study the stock, and they would purchase the stock, but not really. It was, you know, all pretend. And then, you know, at the end of the year, they would sell the stock, and they either made a profit or a loss.
They do have that program here. So should she decide, you know, I worked as the executive director for Junior Achievement. They teach financial literacy and entrepreneurship in the schools. So you are talking about that financial piece, and you're starting in kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade. And they also have a stock market challenge where it allows the same concept with fictitious shares.
Right.
And they're doing that in a market hour. So there are opportunities for her to be involved.
You know what I had? Growing up, that taught me?
No, what?
Monopoly. I own a few banks still, but you know. Listen, Pamela, who did that? That was a beautiful song. I love that. I bet you got that at school all the time. How can business entrepreneurs also plan financially?
Well, that's the big question. Most of them are so focused on what they're doing that they're not as focused on what they're doing financially. I mean, there's six areas we look at. One is the numbers. Because when you really know your financial numbers, you know your balance sheet, and you know your profit and loss, you know where your return on investment is coming on your marketing, you know what it's costing you to get a sale, you can actually, that informs you of what you should be doing next in your business. There's also the entity situation. Are you created in the right entity? I have all kinds of people are just, well, I'm talking about a tax entity. So people talk about, well, I have an LLC. Well, that's not a tax entity.
No.
So it's what tax entity are you? And I know I had a client last year that we switched her entity and saved her $22,000 in taxes.
Ooh.
So, I mean, we're not talking about small money here. It's something to pay attention to. And it could
be. Well, that's a car.
I know. And it could be that in 2 years we change it again to something else because there are different entities you can be. And it, whatever the size of your business or whatever your income is, that sometimes you aren't in the right entity and you're, let's not give the government any more money than we need to.
No.
I mean, I'm all for paying what I owe, but I'm not going to pay them more than that.
Well, I think more and more people now are alert to the overall concept of financial planning. But what's the best way, do you think, Pam, for them to get started?
That
right now?
Right now, the best thing to do is to get started. because so many people are like, well, I don't have enough, or I can't do this.
Is financial planning as simple as we can only afford $20 a week in the bank?
Yes,
it is. For a lousy 0.5% interest.
You know, we have to create a habit.
That's what I'm getting at.
We have to create a habit of saving. And if it's giving up a Starbucks, or it's giving up a lunch, or it's giving up going out to dinner once a month so that you can put some money aside, that makes all the difference
in the world. Well, quite frankly, lunch, $7 for a sandwich these days now, a cup of coffee. I mean, I'm back to bars, you know. What about picking the right financial advisor?
Well, first and foremost, you want experience. And I say that in all love to all the new people getting into the business.
God,
as long as they have a mentor that has the experience, because it is such a broad field. The other thing you want to make sure is you're working with someone who's staying up to date.
Are there a lot of changes happening all the time?
Well, there are. There's changes happening all the time, and there's different products that come out that fit some people. And I always like to say that every financial product was created for a reason. It may not work for you, but it was created for a reason. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're using the right products for you. And so having the knowledge about what's going on in that area is critical. And so those are two main things. And then you got to like the person. I mean, don't work with somebody you don't like.
No, I guess that must be hard. But you've got clients all across America.
I do.
The show goes all over the place, so you may get people, you know, call you up from God knows where. But how do you deal with out-of-staters? Is it just communication on the phone? Or
I actually go most of the time, at least to get started. Like, I've flown for Texas for a day. I go to Illinois. I go to Colorado. Go to California. I'll travel. I've got another client who wants me to go meet his son in Atlanta. If it gets to the point where I feel it's worth time and effort,
right,
I will go.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there's always Zoom.
Well, if you look at those write-offs, you've got flying and restaurants, dinners.
Yes, but it does pull me out of my office.
But what about your family, too? It takes you away, you know?
Yeah, my husband goes with me sometimes.
Oh, that's nice, then.
And my girls are all grown.
Okay, out of the house, they're flown.
And two out of three are entrepreneurs.
Wow. So there you go. It's all of the family.
Yeah.
That's a good name for a TV show, that one. Listen, Lucretia, your first love. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. What would it be, the American shooter? The Veil voice,
come
or the Tango Verde
voice?
It's
like choosing which one of your children you love. Each one of them I love in their own unique way.
Right. Well, that's a fair answer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You've got links all over the place, but that's on our website. All your links are here. Are going to be on our site on Business Radio X. Anybody listening, you've got photos of all the ladies, their links, their websites, their social media platforms, and you can read about them as well, because we do all of that. I want to ask you all one question, all right, because we've only got 5 minutes left, because we're helping people, are we not? And let's start with you, Lindsay. What's the biggest mistake you feel you've made in business?
The biggest mistake I think I've made, let's see, I think for me, I think it can be a challenge for you to really hone in on what your specialty is. I think when you are an entrepreneur, you develop these skills inherently of, I can communicate, I can do sales, I can do organization, I can do my bookkeeping, I can do events. Like, you start to realize all these things, and then it's confusing for people to know how you can be of value when you're working with them, with a client.
Right.
And so I think understanding where you are good and sticking to that, and clearly communicating that message, you know, I think that that's important, because people will come to you and ask you to do something that you feel like, oh, it's business, so I need to do it. And in my instance, I think it was being able to clearly communicate what I could do, what my genius was for me, mm-hmm. and then honing in on that, and growing that, and being able to clearly communicate that to end user.
Well,
that may be.
If you're listening, I hope you took that on. Because I think it's wonderful advice from Lindsay Welch, the CEO, president of Autus Strategies, LLC, here in Tucson. Now, our next guest, you haven't been around for 20 years in your business. You've been here 5 minutes. But you've done a lot of study. You've done a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And there are young people in your shoes, mm-hmm. similar, to do the same things. What's your advice not to do?
What not to do?
What's been your worst decision so far?
It's something I'm kind of stuck in right now, is that I get a lot of requests for me to work for free.
Oh, funny about that.
Right. So, nonprofits, I've worked with probably a dozen nonprofits in my life in various capacities, everything from doing what I do now, translation, interpretation, or event planning, or what have you, all kinds of different roles I've played. And I really believe in nonprofits, and I believe that they're really doing the work of really making each community a better place and the world as a whole. And so I want to help everybody. and a lot of people are asking me to work for free. And so I'm struggling with...
You're learning how to say, look,
right.
I'm hungry. And I've got to eat.
Exactly. I have a business to run, which is a new sentence to come out of my
mouth. Quickly, ladies, how do you advise her? What does she say?
I think never sell yourself short, and that people who really respect you should not be asking you to do so for free or at a discount. Your biggest supporters should be the first to pay for your service. And so I would say know your value and stand behind your value. And sometimes that means having tough conversations about, I want to, but I'm not able to do that. And I think if you open the door to doing that for free, it's really hard to then be taken as a business professional and not just as a professional volunteer.
Respect thyself and thy business, very much so, because you are a professional, and that's that. Lucretia?
Well, I answered that question already previously, where I said the biggest mistake that I made was not believing enough in myself and not feeling as though I could do it on my own. But to your point about the free stuff is that there will be a time when you are going to be able to do stuff pro bono. But it's just not when you're first starting off.
Right.
Because I know I got a lot, with the publication, there are a lot of people that want me to run free ads, and I'm very supportive of small business. Definitely, I'm very committed to small business. And so I wasn't able to do that in the early years, but I am able to now. And there's this guy that goes to Cienega High School that has a window washing business, and I want to put his ad in for free because he's a young guy trying to start out, and I want to be encouraging to him. So that time will come.
Yeah.
But as you said, you've got to know your worth and not get on the train of doing like free stuff for people. Let them realize you're
new. Very, very grateful today to Lucretia Free for coming on, the publisher of the Tankaviti Voice, the Veil Voice, and of course, womenshooter.com. You want to check that one out and be one of the 35,000. I'm looking forward to going online and finding that out myself. And last but not least, Young Hopman.
All right, so sometimes partnerships work. Mostly they don't, because it always ends up that one partner does most of the work and the other one wants most of the credit. So if you're ever in a situation where you're looking to have a partner, I would have you hesitate and hesitate and hesitate and make sure that the understanding and the agreement is ironclad. Because I had a partner back in Illinois when I first got started, and it really did not work out well. Because, yes, I was the money, I was the rainmaker, I was the one doing all the business, and the other person wanted all the money. So be careful. That's a mistake that I won't make again. And politely decline. Just do not let people talk you into doing free work until you're ready to offer some free work. Right. When I first started, all the people, all the advisors, we didn't charge for planning very often. I charge for planning now all the time because it is a lot of time and a lot of effort, and my plans are good.
I'm kind of taking the opportunity to see if I can negotiate other things of worth. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of where I'm at right now, to understand what my work is worth and what these other
folks can
offer.
You can always trade. That's not selling out.
Right.
I trade.
Right. So
I'm
learning how to have that conversation.
Sometimes people genuinely do not have the money but need your service.
Right.
Now, down the track, they might have a lot of money. And you'd be very glad that they're going to be your client then. But you've got to start off at an equal basis of respect. Mm-hmm. I'll do this for you, but it's a value of this amount. What can we trade that you have? I would love that chair you've got over there.
Right. I think being strategic in who you're soliciting for your business and knowing who your end client is and then working to do that, because rather than you waiting for business to come in, sometimes you have to be willing to say, this is a person I think I could offer services to and I'm soliciting them, and don't get clouded or confused or gray the waters between what you're trying to accomplish as far as your foundational supporters in your business. And I think that as long as you keep your focus on that, I think that that's helpful for you to be able to know that you're soliciting a particular client. for you to build as your initial client base.
Right.
Thank you, Lindsay. Wonderful wisdom. Wonderful ladies, guests today. Thank you all. Terrific panel.
Thanks for having us.
What a wonderful show. We had Lindsay Welch, we had Morgan Lang, we had Lucretia Free, and we had Pam Hopman on the No Glass Ceiling Show with Mark Bishop here in Tucson on Broadway, the Stuart Title Studio on Broadway, and part of the Business Radio X Network across America. We trust you enjoyed the show, and we'll hope you'll be back again.